I'm, as Anthony said, I'm Katrin Digrave. I'm one of the evangelists that is working here at the Microsoft office in Belgium. My focus for the last few months has been Windows 8, so Windows 8, Windows 8, Windows 8, and more specifically Windows 8 apps. So the objective of today's session is really to go over some of the things that keep coming back a lot in the apps that we have been building. How have we gathered that feedback? Well, we have been working with partners and we have been working with developers in Belgium to build apps. Now, the focus of the session, so the assumptions that we do have in the session is that you have some knowledge of Windows 8. It's not a very detailed coding session, and we're also not going to actually show you any of those apps and with elements that that we have learned. So it's more around tips and tricks and hints on how you can test it better, how you can optimize your application, with the objective of publishing that to the store. And we will mention some of the store features or things you should take into account when publishing. Now, let's move on to the agenda, and then we can give an idea on the current status of the Windows 8 and the process to go into the store as we know it today. So we'll start with our current milestone, and then we have some news since yesterday. We know when Windows 8 will be launched, so that's great to be able to know exactly when you have to be ready if you want to be there for general availability. So coming back to that in a moment. Then we're also going to talk a bit about how we have gathered the information we are discussing today. As I mentioned, the things that we do assume you have some knowledge of is, like, for example, if we mention Windows Runtime, the word Metro. So I think you will be able to follow fine without that knowledge, but it will be easier if you have knowledge. So once we go over the current process today of how we build and review apps and publish apps to the store, we'll go into those 10 learnings. And they're actually split up between technical learnings, user experience, specifically Metro guidelines that come back that we have learned, and then also some very specifics on the Windows Store certification and what you need to make sure you take into account. Some very easy to do, some a bit more difficult that will allow you to be accepted from the first time, which is really important if you want to not to lose any time. All right, so as I was mentioning, so there's some great news since yesterday evening. Was announced at a worldwide partner conference that is now taking place in Toronto. We have announced the dates for the next milestones. So where are we today and what have we been learning? Also the content of this session. So as you probably know, Windows 8 developer preview was launched in September last year. Now in that time we started talking to some people already building apps, but the main focus was after February when we had the first, the actual consumer preview. So our learnings have mostly been gathered between February 2012 and today. Now in May we had the release preview, which is more or less the RC of Windows 8. And we now just have one more milestone to go before we are in general availability. Now what is the difference? RTM, release to manufacturing, will come early August. So that means that actually the code is all final, the store will be final, well, will be in a more final mode. It means you can actually build and publish applications that don't need to be recompiled against another version. So it's important to know in August you will not have that final version. Now, between release preview and RTM, we don't expect a lot of breaking changes. There might be a few APIs where there's some impact, but mainly RC or release preview code will still run in the new version, in the RTM version as well. Then, by end of October 2012, we have something called general availability. Now, what does this mean? Actually, it's when you will be able to buy devices in the store with Windows 8 on it. So, that's if you are building apps, no matter what type of app, it's a small app, a large app, you will want to be there by GA, as we call it. Why? Because we have PR, we have campaigns, we have local spotlights for Belgian apps to give some visibility. So I'm sure you'll want to target that milestone if you're building now. So that means we still have a few months to finalize, fine-tune those apps. And what is the process now? So today we are indeed at release preview with release RTM coming very soon in a few weeks. Now, how have we gathered the information for this session? So it's about working on App Clinics. App Clinics is one of the support options that we have if you have questions, if you want to discuss store information, if you have some technical questions, user experience questions. So we have gathered information from there. We have also gathered information from something called Application Excellence Labs, and I'll come back to that in a minute. And then, of course, we also gathered information from talking to colleagues from other countries, learnings from that, but also locally with some developers, with small development of small apps, with development of bigger apps. So really just we try to gather things that come back the most, taking into account having some UX, some technical, and some store-specific elements. All right. Now, if you are developing today and you noticed the Excellence Labs element in my previous slide, so what is Excellence Labs and what does it mean and what is that? So today, the Windows Store, that's the location where you publish all the Metro-style apps. The Windows Store today is not open for not open for everyone. So that means you have to go through a certain process in order to have your store token. Sorry, excuse me. In order to have your Windows Store token provided to you, so you can register for the store and reserve your app name, or even publish your app. Now, because this is a process that it's still not open for general availability, so we are still managing the process in a very one-on-one basis. So what can you do today? So if you have an application that is fully functional, maybe with some last elements that you need to check, we propose to you that you register for a App Excellence Lab. So if you go through the Metro map that Anthony mentioned, you can register for the App Clinic and ask for the Excellence Lab. So you can register today, and we have dates in July and August where you can do that. Of course, we have had them in May and in June too. So the Excellence Lab today allows you to go with a field engineer, a Microsoft engineer, go through a certain validation process. You receive the checklist up front, and it's really a checklist that will be used by the store as well. So it's really based on the store certification for a big part. So if you go through the test, and your application is tested on a machine, on different machines, and goes through a certain testing, then you the engineer will review with you your application. Now, if it's a very broad audience application, your application, if it passes as well, will receive a token to register for the store. And you will actually be able to go through a second review and then simply publish to the store directly. So the store actually awaits a certification by the second review team, the virtual AEL in this screen. If your application is not really for broad audience, you can still get a token. So you will be able, and it's very important, be able to reserve your app name in the store. But your application will only be certified when the store opens for general availability. This is for the following. This is just to make sure that applications that we publish today, because we're still in, well, RC beta, that they are really broad audience. It's to prevent that there's a lot of small applications that that people will just install and not really understand why there's so many of a certain type. So broad audience applications or really special applications will be able to already publish today, and the others will just wait a bit longer, but you have your token and you have your access, and that's a very important point. So if you have something ready to test in the coming weeks, make sure they register, because we have a set of time slots that is limited. Now, this application excellence lab goes to a certain process, and of course the learnings that we will see now have to do with that excellence lab proceedings as well. All right, so the third learnings that we gathered are the following. We are going to talk around process lifecycle and how your app is tested by the store team and by the excellence lab, so that it doesn't crash. That's the performance part, but also that it resumes and it comes back to full running mode in a correct way. So we'll share some tips on how to do that. There's also some important tips on multilingual apps, specifically Belgium. I'm imagining a lot of you, if you're working for apps that have to be multilingual for Belgium, then it's important, but also worldwide, if you want to serve more countries, you might have some interesting learnings there. So the performance and stability is also linked to process lifecycle. And then there are three things that come back a lot with regards to user experience. Tiles, the layouting, and up bar. So we'll take a look at those and some tips and tricks on how you can best implement those. And then the last four elements are around Windows Store certification. The first one is very general, some very good tips as well. And then three elements that you will that we have seen that happen a lot. Sorry. That we have been facing a few times, and it's practically very easy to solve, but you sometimes have to resubmit your app two or three times because of those elements that you haven't foreseen up front. So if you know these tips, will probably help you a lot in not being rejected and then having to certify again or going through the whole process again. So this is what we have for the session. So let's jump into the first one, which is around the process life cycle and the way that Metro applications function. So I'll start with a small review or looking back at how that process runs on Metro. So recapping if you haven't been looking at this in detail. So differently than normal desktop applications, Metro style applications take the full screen and they run in a full screen or on a snap mode, but they take the full power of the machine. And there is a specific state process state that you have to take into account so that your app keeps working as if nothing happened if you switch them and such. So in the first phase, the user will launch your app and your app is in something called running mode. So the app is running, that's fine. Then at a certain moment, the user will switch to another application. The user, either, so in most cases, your application goes into the background. And in that moment, your application will actually be in something called suspended mode. Now, the suspended mode, it's important that you use the API correctly so that you release the resources that your app is using, and that you save any state that you want to call back when the user comes back to your application. The thing is, your suspended state, in a suspended mode, you can subscribe to an event, a suspending event, so that you know exactly when the suspension is happening, because between suspension and termination, you do not get notified. Which means the termination can happen at any moment, either because of resources on the machine, so you never know when it's going to happen. So you can subscribe to the event for suspension, you cannot subscribe to the event for termination. So release all your resources in suspension, when you go into suspension. And if there's anything specific you want to continue doing, there's some solutions to go. For example, you have the opportunity to do background transfer operations, so transferring files, for example. You can implement that, and there's some good samples on how to do that. A second thing is, for example, with audio. If you want to keep playing audio, there's also a solution for having background audio that keeps playing, even if your application is not on the front. So But do take into account the store will also validate your application and the Excellence Lab, but also the store will validate the fact that you come back to the application going from suspended to running in a correct way. So you actually get 5 seconds to what happens. You go into background. After a few seconds, the suspension or the suspending event handler is called, and you get up to 5 seconds to save state. Now, if the process that you, if your process takes more than 5 seconds to save that state, Windows will actually assume your application is crashed and will terminate it. So, the second thing is for the Windows Store, you only get 2 seconds to do suspension. So the Windows Store is actually more strict than the actual Windows itself. So in order to have your application accepted in the store, you must make sure that you suspend, in the event handler for suspending, that you actually do that in 2 seconds. Normally you should take 1 second or less. So then you go into terminated state and at some point. And then you have some events you can tap into to either reload the information coming from the session, or if you haven't been in terminated mode, the user goes back to the application and you have to make sure that, for example, you go to the right page if the user was in a specific page or in a certain state. You will see that for page navigation, the templates that we have in Visual Studio already tap into that opportunity and use the session state to save the current page, the current navigation stack as well. But of course, for all the rest, you have to make sure that you load that data correctly. Now, there's a few important tips for the Excellence Lab, but also for store, because the store is a bit more strict sometimes. So, how can you actually test that? So you have to make sure that the context of your application is not lost. So I have these two tips on the screen. I have actually another tip, which we also saw in the past with some applications. So first of all, you can test your app if you're using the app and then you switch to another app. You send your own app to the background. And you come back to your app within 5 seconds. What should happen is you shouldn't see any difference from where the context is that you were just before. So it's one very easy way of testing. The second thing is if you wait, so you send your app to the background and then you come back to your app, but you actually wait 15 seconds before you come back. At that point, your suspension mode will have kicked in and you will come back into running. So there is important that, again, because you haven't been terminated, unless there's really not a lot of resources on the machine, but then it's very important, again, you haven't lost context. Now, there is one extra tip there that I should mention. In some cases, there's something on the screen going on, and it might be video, it might be a game or something. You might actually lose a few seconds of the process, of the context. So for example, if video is playing, I've tested that in a proof of small application. If your video is playing and you go into, you send your application to the background, because of the seconds that it takes until the suspension kicks in, you might lose a few seconds in video. Now, there's an extra tip. You could use something called the visibility changed. You can tap into an event handler call with the visibility changed, and then you could even tackle into that video playing or a game playing. So that's just an extra tip you might also take into account. You shouldn't, for a normal application, I'm taking an example of, let's say, a news reader, you're on a specific page, you're reading the content. If you wait 2 seconds or 5 seconds, the state doesn't really change on that page, so there's no need to actually do something with the visibility change. But in some cases, might be useful to go there. So there's a full detailed description on the process lifecycle on the page on this page here. Let me go to some other tips. Because of the way that suspension and termination happens, it's also important to take into account when your application starts, to use the, something called a previous execution state to detect in which way you should or not should or should not reload the user state. So for example, there's three very easy steps to take. If your application was terminated because of some process on the machine, because it was shut down, because the user logged off or something like that, the previous state was terminated, so you actually should restore some settings because the user will expect that the application is still in the same state. On the other hand, if the user closes the application because it is Alt F4 or you take the application and you drag it to the bottom, in that case, your previous execution state will come as closed by user. Well, in that case, of course, it's not the objective to go back to the state the user was in because that user closed the application and actually probably wants to reload something. And also, if your application wasn't running previously because there was some termination, but the previous execution state is set to not running, then again, we recommend that you do not reload any state, but just start up again in an empty application. Now, I do have a few demos, but I want to mention that the actual demo is what it's going to do with showing you how you can go into resume state and go into background and all. It's actually very difficult to show in Link because the time that it takes to for Link, it adds some seconds. So I'm just going to show you a bit of code and how you can tap into the information. But you should actually do the test yourself about going for 5 seconds and then the 15 seconds and all that. So let me now share my screen. Let me go into one of my applications. So this is just a very simple demo application that taps into process lifecycle. And we're going to use Visual Studio to actually do a resuming state and suspend and resume state, and then a full termination. So if I go, so this is application very simple, just tapping into a ticker that keeps on counting. So if I go into a Visual Studio, I have something called suspension. So it can actually trigger a suspension because otherwise for testing it's actually very difficult sometimes. There are some tips with the 5 seconds and the 15 seconds, but anyway, sometimes it's difficult. So you can do suspend. At this moment, my application is actually suspended. So I can now go back and go into resume. And let's go back to the application. So now the information has been saved into the session state. And I can see that I have been suspended for seven seconds. So this is just to allow me to do some testing. And of course, because my ticker was also in session state, the last tick, I can also see how many ticks elapsed. And now I can just go into suspend and then shut down. It is actually going to shut down my application. So this is how you can test it using Visual Studio. Now the code itself, there's some good samples on the sample pack in on dev.windows.com, where you can actually test different execution states, well, previous execution states, as I was saying, so that you can detect what happened and then either relaunch the application with a new state or load information from session state, or if you have saved something to the hard disk, maybe load something from the local data as well. So let's go back to the slides. And this is Link. This is slightly different than the others. Okay, I was looking for my slides. There you go. So process lifecycle. It's a very important one, and tested in detail by the store team, but also tested in detail during the application excellence lab. So it's a very important one to keep that in mind, to not be rejected by launch in the store. So process lifecycle, the second tip. We are in Belgium, but also Windows will actually be released in 109 different languages. 109 different languages, and then you still have the store languages and markets, which are the same, as some are different as well. So there's quite a potential for reaching non-French or Dutch or English or other users. If you have applications that are non-English, for instance, it's already interesting to see the opportunities to do multilingual apps. So let's take a look. First of all, for localizing apps, you have the features that you, the support that you can use, as you probably know from other .NET applications. So you can use resources, and you can use those in C Sharp, in VB, you can use those in JavaScript as well. We now have something called resources in JavaScript as well. Now, what is important here regarding multilingual apps or even single language apps that are not in English? So, first of all, for the store, if you're going for store certification, your application must support one of the store certification languages. Now, in the meantime, there's quite a lot of languages in the list, so there's a link there with those languages. I was telling you before that we have 109 languages that will be Windows will be available by RTM. Now, the store certification languages are slightly lower than that, so you must make sure your application is at least in one of those certification languages. Second thing is you could have an application that supports more than just the store certification languages. What is a store certification language? It's actually a language in which someone in the store team is going to validate your app in. So that is not for the 109. I forgot the exact number today, but it's listed on that link. So the allowable languages are the languages in which Windows is itself is supported, and also it's also part of what you can actually implement. Now, one very important tip when doing your upload of the application to the store is that if you have an application that is in more than one language, the store will automatically detect those languages. And I'll show you in a minute how does the store detect that from your application package, from your apex. But you must make sure that you prepare all the languages in which your application is implemented, so that you can provide screenshots and that you can provide descriptions, branding information in each of those languages. So do foresee, if you have 20 languages, that you will spend quite some time in the store portal to upload that information. So you need to prepare all those languages. Now, I also have a tip that is very helpful when doing multilingual apps. It's called the Multilingual App Toolkit for Visual Studio. And it is provided on the link that I'm showing there, but you can also go there by dev.windows.com and then downloads. And it is a product that is installable on Visual Studio and that allows you to manage the process of translation much easier. Now, some of the features are a full integration with Visual Studio. You can use something called a pseudo language to do testing, with some strings that are longer and that have some very special characters, so that you see that's actually pseudo-testing. And you can even put that language in the control panel. There's a pseudo-test language that you can use to test if your application reacts correctly. So it's a great tool also to use during testing. It's easier to integrate with translation files, so you can send translation files to companies that do translation, and the XLIF is a certain specific format for used in those translations. There's also an editor for that, and it even integrates with the Microsoft Translator. Should you think about using that as your only translation engine, might not be such a good idea, but it's a really great tool if you're doing multilingual apps, because in a development phase you can already automate quite a lot. So do take a look at that tool as well. Now let me switch into some demos of multilingual apps. Let me go into sharing my screen. So I'm going going into the application resources. All right, so this application is one of the sample applications, and it's a JavaScript application. So I'm going to show two. I'm going to show a JavaScript and a C#, because there's some tips and hints that are slightly different. First of all, if you're using Visual Studio in for example, in English, what will happen is that Visual Studio will add the default language to your project in the CS project file, CS project, or in this case, JavaScript solution file. In JavaScript applications, you have this setting here that you can use to set the default language of your application. That's one. That's for the default language. The second thing is you should make sure that the application manifest, there's an editor for that, but if you go into, let me close it and quickly show that in the editor. So you open it in XML. There's a section called resources. And you must make sure that, first of all, the first language that you set in there, they normally are generated automatically, but maybe you want to change those to have a correct default language. The default language that you set there is the first language, or the default language that will be used. So, for example, if the user is not supporting a certain language, it will, by default, do English in this case. And then the other supported languages that you add here, language culture combination can also be used. This is important to have the correct language display in the store. And the store certification will actually use this application manifest when you upload your package to the store to provide you the different screens in which you have to provide your screenshots and your details of the application in those correct languages. So do make sure that you set those languages correctly in the resources. So that is for the application manifest, setting the language. The second thing, this is JavaScript, so the second thing is for C# projects. Let me see where this is the project in C#. For the C# project, it's slightly different. So you have the application itself. You can see there's no default language setting in the visual editor, so what do you need to do? You actually need to go set the default language in the CS project file itself. So you need to open it in Notepad or something and go set it there yourself. For the second part, which is the app manifest file, there it's exactly the same. Open with XML editor, and then you set the default languages, or the accepted languages here, with the first one being the default language. Secondly, but you probably have an idea on the options there. So for JavaScript files, you have an option to use JavaScript resource files with an extension RES.json, and then you can use those automatically to change languages. Now let me just execute this one to show you a few options that you have when doing multilingual applications. Now, by default, the applications will revert either to your default language or to the default language of the user. It's up to you how you define that, but you can automatically revert to the default language of the user by using the API. Now, there's an interesting demo here, and it's this one. Normally, you will use the language from the user. What you can do is really always take the latest settings of the user language. So what do I mean by that? The control panel has some settings that you can use for languages and for culture. Well, if you change those languages and the default language in there, your application can actually automatically react to that and load the current active language or the current active setting. So if you go to the desktop and we go to settings, to control panel, you have the languages setting. By default, you can see I have United States in here. Now, let me go back to the application, and I can do French as well. So let me just choose French and move that up. In that case, when I go back to the application, you see that the application actually has reacted to that current language. So you're just loading the current language and has shown the information in the current selected language by the user in the system. So you can react on the fly by subscribing to the runtime events, but you can also use the default language or default language settings from the user and not reload those dynamically. Now, what I wanted to also make sure that you, let me put that back up again. Also, I wanted to make sure that you are aware of the user options there is if I go to the home, I'm going to an application called Finance. There you go. Just simply the Finance application to show you something that I think is a good way of implementing. So if you're using, in Belgium, you might be using some settings in the English setting, some settings, maybe a keyboard in French and so forth. You sometimes have different languages, and depending on the settings of the user, some applications show you the application in French, some in Dutch, some in English. Personally, I would really advise you to offer that option to the user. So you have a default that you go to, but you should, it's really a personal recommendation, you should also take into account maybe implementing a setting that the user can control. So, for example, myself, I sometimes prefer to have some content in English because I'm doing testing or whatever, or I'm simply living in another country and I want to have a certain language. So how can you implement that? A good example is the Finance app that allows you to display content from other countries. And in this case, I can even display content from, for example, Belgium Dutch. Now, it doesn't change on the fly, so I'm not going to do it here, but it does give you a good example of how you could also implement it. So instead of just relying on the default language and on the actual system language, on the context, you could even override those by adding this field in here. So that's a personal recommendation. Do take into account. It's not probably not that much extra work to actually add it in a settings flyout. All right, let's go back to application, stop that application, go back into slide mode, which is stop sharing. So, a quick recap, you can support multiple languages, you should always set your default languages the first in the app manifest, but make sure that you also offer your users the choice if you can, if you have multiple languages. That's personally something I would highly recommend, because your users will be so much happier by having the choice to use the language they prefer. All right, so the third one is performance and stability. Something that we see is it's very much linked into the process lifecycle as well, but there's some tips on how you can increase performance. So first of all, how can you test it? It's very important your application doesn't crash, doesn't freeze, because otherwise you won't have a store certification, but your users will also not have a very good experience. So what are the tips there to test and detect those elements? First of all, make sure you install your application on a fresh Windows 8 install with no Visual Studio, no extra software installed. You will see that dependencies in that case are very important, and you will see if your application actually behaves correctly. Developer machines have some extra stuff, so you will see that probably it's important to actually do the testing on another machine. It's also very important for the stability and for the store certification that your application launches without an active internet connection, even the first time. So your splash screen has to load Your application must not hang if you don't have an internet connection. So test for that and foresee that as well. And if your application relies heavily on internet connection, make sure you just show a correct error message saying you cannot continue. But you have to make sure you control that. Around the stability, I just want to come back to the splash screen. So the splash screen is allowed for up to 5 seconds, and actually should only be a few seconds. If you have, if you need more than that, or the first one you need more, make sure you use something called the extended splash screen. So there's some good information on how to use an extended splash screen in the demos and in the samples. For Windows, your splash screen, your application should launch for certification. Your application should launch in 5 seconds or less. And then when you go to the store, it's important, the store certification requires you to suspend in 2 seconds or less, while Windows itself allows you for 5 seconds. So it's an important the restriction you have here, and you should take that into account and test it before uploading your application to the store. There's also something that is going to help you a lot with the certification and the testing is the Windows App Certification Kit, or WAC. Make sure you use that extensively when you're developing and testing your app. Another point is lower power devices. Today we don't have any ARM devices yet that you can test on, but there's some tips. So you could use an Atom processor. You make sure you use a normal hard disk, not an SSD. Use a very old machine you have somewhere. We are trying to do that for some apps, and that actually helps us to test. And there's some extra tips on that URL as well, but it's a very important element. Use the WAC tool in the whole process, not just at the end, because you will find some dependencies. And then try to make sure you take into account loading time, suspension, termination, and coming back to the application in a correct way. Because if your application crashes, what happens is the user is just returned to the start screen and there's nothing really happening. So again, suspension, termination mode is very important. If the user comes back after a crash, it's important that the state is reloaded correctly. So actually, the user doesn't really feel has to restart the application from scratch and go to the product page and everything. So, but this is a very, very important point in the testing process and in the store certification process. All right, so we've seen some of the more technical testing and things you should implement. Now let's pass on to three things in UX that are important. This is actually also taking into account some of the Microsoft UX review team that has been reviewing some applications and that has discovered or has seen something come back quite a few times. The first of all is working with tiles and notifications. A very simple one is the fact that if you're using a white tile, sorry, the guidelines mention that you should not use a white tile if you do not have live notifications, live tiles. So if they're just a static logo, there's no use for having a white tile. The store doesn't restrict you, but the guidelines for Metro do. So this is more around the guidelines for Metro. So what is the tip here? Make sure you use live tiles from within the app or through push notifications to really use that to its full extent if you're using white tiles. Second thing is use white and narrow tiles, small logos tiles. If you're using, if you're doing updates, use it too. And the third tip is around what are you going to use as a tile template. There's a few on the screen. There's two things here. One is make sure that you use something that still shows enough information about your current application. Enough text, or make sure you don't use a tile that is a template that has very large text icons or very large text font when you have a lot of content. If you do have a lot of content, choose something with small font because you cannot, it will just be truncated and you won't see anything. The second tip is the one that you see on the right. What you will see on some of the applications today is that they have a combination of a logo, a badge logo, and a small logo there, and the name of the application, and sometimes they overlap. The second thing is try to use something that you are 100% sure your user recognizes the application logo. Because if you only have text and images coming up, sometimes, after some time, you don't really know anymore what application it is. So my tip, it's more a personal tip again, but it's how I have been using the system, is the name of the application in small is actually very useful in a lot of cases, unless you use the logo in a clear way in the lifetime itself. So do take into account, it seems like a very small one, but it has come back in a lot of applications. So that's why we're sending this as one of the tips. Now, I did foresee a demo here. I'm not going to do it in the interest of time, but go into the live tile templates and make sure you think about it. It is much more important than it might seem, because people actually go into your application much more if your live tile is a good one. All right, so number five is around user experience as well. It's around layout and scaling of content and snapping. So it's more of a bit of a recap. What we have seen a lot as well is, so applications have a minimum resolution, but the widescreen resolution is actually the standard resolution that you will see the standard minimum resolution that you will see in a lot of cases. What is important here? Your application should display optimally in different views, in different resolutions, but also views. So the views are a normal field view, which is the minimum. The second one is a normal widescreen resolution. The snapped resolution is actually required for storage certification, while the portrait is not required but recommended. Make sure you use use with your content depending on your orientation and the view, because it is something that we see in quite some applications that could be better. So some tips there: scaling and using the right resolution. So what can you use there? I'm going to give a few tips. So if you're using XAML, make sure you use the different visual states with the Visual State Manager. It works great. The second thing is the most of the controls that we provide, such as grid views and list views and all, they do already support those different views. Make sure you do scaling or fitting to the screen if you use fixed layouts. And there's a very important tip, is how to test, because we get that question quite a lot. If you don't have higher resolution screens, there's some very good testing in the Visual Studio Simulator. So do use that, and also change your orientation, the portrait view, if you want to react to that one. It's not a requirement for store, but it's a guideline to do it. So the scaling of your content, also the last point, if you're using a lot of images and content, and visual content like assets, you have an opportunity to provide three different sizes. So do use the 100%, the 140%, and 180%. And Visual Studio, or your application, allows you to provide those different sizes in your assets in your application. So use that as well, specifically for applications that have a lot of graphics, maybe for games as well. It's an important one. So make sure to also think about this. The guidelines, the actual guidelines for the UX part, are in this file, on this resource. So there's application. There's guidelines for flexible layouts with using the correct adapting to the content and to the size, snapped and filled views where users will place two applications next to another, one in snapped, one in filled. And then the scaling and snapping guidelines are there as well. So a very important one to take into account. All right. The next one on UX is application bars, app bars, navigation bars, commanding. What is commanding is, as you know, applications are very much the full screen and without a lot of Chrome, so without a lot of buttons and actions and commands on the screen itself. So we use app bars, but we have seen some things that come back with app bars that could be that you should take into account. First of all, application bars should always be placed in the bottom. If you're been testing and using some Windows 8, you will see that this is by default the case. The second thing is you should always try to group commands. So place group commands so that, that there's not 100 commands on the screen because they don't fit, but group them into maybe into context menus or fly-up menus. The second thing is grouping the commands on the left or on the right. How do you do those? Global commands always on the right, context commands always on the left. I'll show you an example in just a minute. The next thing is about commands is there's navigation commands. Now, navigation commands should always go into the top navigation bar. The top navigation bar can be a transient bar. It's recommended to actually be transient so that it disappears in when you're just using the app. But it can also be a bit larger navigation bar, but always going at the top. So it actually comes on top of content that allows you to go home or go to other sections or go back. Although the back button is actually in your screen, in your content, that's an exception to other navigation that should always go into the top app bar. All right, so let's look into one example of an application that is using commands and group commands at the correct place and the navigation. Let me go into desktop and go to the start screen. If I take the example of the Photos application, the Photos application itself, if I right click, I can see my app bar, and the app bar is placed at the bottom. I don't have a navigation bar now because I'm at the home, so I cannot navigate anywhere. And there, they don't provide the section navigation in the navigation bar. They don't do that, so it doesn't come up. Now, if I go into Pictures library, and I go into one of the libraries, in this case, Background Images, I have a navigation control in here that's a recommendation, but I don't have actual other navigation. So if I right-click, because I'm using a mouse, I can see that I have some commands that are all grouped into the right because they are global. Global to all elements on the screen. I can give feedback and start a slideshow. I can select all. I can do some importing. Now, as soon as I start selecting elements, what you see is that the commands are contextual. Contextual is because there's something, most cases, almost every case, something is selected on the screen. If you select elements, you will activate those commands and they disappear if nothing is selected because it's contextual. So this is what we mean by right and left grouping of commands in a contextual way. So it's totally different what I can do with the selection here. Clear selection, delete, and whatever I need to do with that selection. So that's what we mean by contextual commands. You will see that some of the Bing applications like this one actually have a navigation bar at the top. It's not a typical app bar, but it is a navigation bar at the top, and it's transient, so it disappears when I don't need it. All right, so let's go back to sharing the slides. Now, the last part of this section is Windows Store certification tips. A lot of what I mentioned is around Windows Store, but I think there's a few specifics that I would like to go through. So Windows Store, let's recap quickly. Windows Store is the only way that people will acquire applications, and your application needs to be published to the store so that people can install it. a side note, you can do sideloading of applications in enterprise. You can also do deployment of enterprise apps through System Center and all that, but specifically speaking about consumer apps or business apps that are available through the store here. So you have a specific, you have different business models, a revenue share, and all that. So if you want to go to the store, first of all, and it's actually the most important tip I'm giving here around store, is please read the store certification requirements and the app developer agreement as well. But store certification requirements, read them in detail and try to check, because well, the tips I gave you, a lot of them are around store, but do just read them in detail, because there's so much information that will help you not have to face rejection in the store because of small things. What are some of the small things we'll see, but please do read this a few times even. So when it comes to store, everything that could affect user privacy will be checked in detail. So it is very important that you only use the app capabilities that you need. So make sure that you check your capabilities section in the Visual Studio for access to document libraries, access to microphone, webcam, and so forth. Access to the internet even. So make sure you take a look into those and only set the ones that you need, because they will impact what you need to do in the store. More specifically, one of them, a very important one, is that you need a privacy policy in almost all cases. If you read the certification, it's actually pretty clear in there, but we have noticed people have to read them twice or three times, us included, to actually understand it. So what does it mean? If you are using any private, any information that could impact privacy, if you're even using internet access, which most applications do, make sure you have a privacy URL in the store portal. Privacy URL is actually something that should be required, well, I recommend it to every application. And it's just a normal privacy file that you a lot of websites actually already have. So link to that one. The second one is, for some settings, you also require a settings charm. Wrong wording here. You have the option to add a privacy element in the settings charm. So the settings charm on the right. Add a privacy that has some text, or it's simply a link to the same URL as in the store. But you have to do the two separately. For example, if you do geolocation, if you do camera access, SMS, text messaging, make sure you have that that privacy in the charms bar as well, so in the settings. It's a very important one. This is also linked, so I recommend to do the two of them if you can, because it will just prevent having issues with that one. It also is impacting age rating. So there's several age ratings in the store. 3+, +3, +7, +12, +16. And there's, depending on some of the games even, there's some external age ratings as well that are required, and some submissions to the store as well. So for age rating, again, you need a privacy policy in the terms of use that corresponds to your age rating in the store. So be sure, check if it actually corresponds, if you don't have anything in there that doesn't correspond to the age rating that you set. If you do the capabilities usage we have just discussed, for example, if you use if you just use internet access, you don't need a 12+. But if you use documents library, geolocation, camera access, know that your application needs to mention 12+. This might be surprising, but it is related to privacy as well. So make sure that the age rating, it's linked to those capabilities. So another thing is, if you do, again, privacy, if you are asking for login, If the login doesn't require an email address and it can be a pseudonym, then you don't need to provide 12 plus 12. If you do, if you have something that identifies the person or you transmit any browsing history, personal data, then you do require a 12 plus requirement. So for a lot of apps, you will see 12 plus will just be the default and the easiest one for you to publish. All right. And then the last one is maybe a small one, but do provide it. When you submit your application to the store, provide a support contact. It's actually a requirement, and you have to provide that because it's listed in your store listing on the store application itself, but also on the web. So do foresee to have a support contact that links to a page on your site or a contact email address. And with that, that's the last one. So we have seen quite a lot that of the tips that will help you with the store certification. For me, that is that's the overview. A quick recap: so handling process lifecycle, some tips on multilingual, specifically also with how the store detects those and how what you need to submit. The performance, the going back to suspend mode, testing, not crashing, some UX tips, and then the source certification. It's really the most recurring ones that we have highlighted here. I hope this was useful. What can I also ask you to finish off? We have, as Anthony has mentioned, we have a full program online that you can follow to start developing. We have support via app clinics. And then, of course, if you're now in the phase of looking into publishing your app pretty soon, make sure that you reserve an app clinic or an excellence lab through an app clinic so that you can either reserve your name of your app, the name of your app, in the Windows Store. And there's a setting in Visual Studio. You go to Store and then you click on Reserve App Name. And then you need to store token for that. So register for Excellence Labs if you have a more or less finished app. Because if it's not finished, again, we do need to inform you of the fact that you will not get that store token, because you could just come back for a second Excellence Lab. No problem there. So take that as a review process. And then to finish off, I would suggest if you have questions, let us know. So I can see there's someone asking if you can download the slides. So today, these slides cannot be downloaded, but we will send you an email to everyone that attended today, and we will send the slides in attachment or a link to download them, yes. So you will be able to download them. All right, so any extra questions? Let's see. All right, so a good question. If you're a big organization having different teams, developing different applications, want to publish to the store? All right, so the question is really, should we have one store account, one per team, one per developer? It's a very good question. So what is possible today? So let me maybe explain that first of all. You will register as a publisher in the store, and it's through a live ID. That live ID is normally a certain email from the company itself. It is then validated, and it is that the information from that person. It's that person that gets paid. So normally, that's some official in your company, some developer manager, or something like that. Now, you are not able to assign any rights. So that other developers can log in but only see a certain app or only upload a certain app or only see the reporting for how many downloads and how many usage for a certain app. So the recommendation I would give there is if it's totally separate teams, separate earnings, I would suggest separating the publishers as well. So having different live IDs and different store accounts. If you're working in teams, I don't think you would ever do one token per developer, because I assume many developers are working on the same app. So it really depends on where the earnings are coming and who wants to be in control. But do note that for several people to access the same store account, you will need to provide them the password. You cannot give them, like have an admin and then have other people as contributors, or you do not have that availability today, at least. So I hope that answers your question. Let me see. The latest hands-on of Windows 8 is in a consumer preview. Is there a new version for release preview? Good question. So actually, the online version that you can download is only is still the previous version. I do have a version of those labs in release preview. So what I can do is we will, let me check with Anthony. So we will make sure that we add the link to the download of those labs for release preview in the email that we send back to you. So yes, a good question. Of course, the link that is online on MSDN will be updated. But for now, I'm sure if you want to move fast, we will make sure that you get those files as well in the email. All right, any other questions? So some questions are coming. All right, so are there any video recordings for Windows 8 camps? Not for the Belgian camps. The only camp, so to speak, that has been recorded is the UX, the Metro User Experience Training in the US. But for normal camps, we have not recorded any. And for now, it's not foreseen that we do record camps. Now, what you do have in a lot of with some updated content are some recordings on Channel 9 from the last TechEd North America and TechEd Europe. But as far as we have scheduled, we do not have any Windows 8 camps that have been recorded by us, unfortunately. So the links to the ticket. I think it's a good question. What we will add to the same email will be a good packed email with the slides and attachment with the new labs also. And we will add a link to ticket website. Well, the ticket recordings website. Yes, good suggestion. Someone is trying to get me to talk about Windows Phone 8. I'm sorry, I do not know. I think it's summer, right? They mentioned summer. I do not know. I'm waiting for that news as well. So Windows Phone 8 SDK, I don't know. We are very, very eager to know as well. All right. Some more questions coming on certifications. We'll stay online for a few more minutes. So in general, is there any certification about development for Windows 8? That's a good question. I'm assuming you mean MCP, Microsoft certified. So for now, there is no certification on that, but I do assume it might come. I don't have any updates on that today, but maybe in the following months, we will see some updates on that. There's another type of certification, which is the Microsoft Partner certification, which is a competency that is indeed confirmed. But if you mean Microsoft Certified Professional, I'm expecting. All right, so Olivier actually has the news. There's already a beta certification now. So indeed, those certifications will come. And we all hope you all certify for those. I'll have those in my planning as well. All right. So if there's no other questions, please join us for the next events in the summer. And don't hesitate to register for an Excellence Lab to review your application and reserve your app in the store. Reserve the app name of maybe if it's a broad audience app, maybe even publish on the store pretty soon, even in RTM.